Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
The show. Now, Amy Marks-Kohr's Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Oh, good morning, friends. How you doing? It is the Chris and Amy show till 1 o'clock today. Always Monday through Friday, and then we have our crossover hour with the Dave Glover show starting at 1. We need to hear from you today and all day and every day. 314-436-7900. That's our phone number. We have a voice message feature on the Odyssey app. That's the app that you use to listen to us live. You can stream us on your phone or your iPad or whatever you happen to have. A-U-D-A-C-Y. We're also streaming visually. If you want to look at us, you can do that on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Oh, man, while we were broadcasting live from the SLU campus before the game on Friday night, it was going down at the Board of Aldermen meeting.
Yikes!
Oh, my gosh, the Board of Aldermen president accused a member of being drunk and then stormed out.
Well,
I mean, wow.
Wow, yeah, it was a little chaotic.
Fun stuff.
We will be chatting about that later today. And speaking of storming out, Jim Edmonds is out.
As
the St. Louis Cardinals broadcaster on the television side of things. And, of course, that has a lot of chatter around St. Louis.
Apparently he's had a lot to say this morning.
He's had a lot to say as well.
And the Blues beat Utah 2-1 last night. Man, I love the name Utah Hockey Club. And remember when the Washington Redskins didn't have a name for about, wasn't it 1 year? 1 year,
yeah,
or two?
And they were the Washington football team.
They should have kept it. They're the Commanders now.
Yeah.
I think Utah should keep Hockey Club. Keep Utah Hockey Club.
So I do too. I do really like Hockey Club. They had a couple of them that they weren't allowed to use. They're not allowed to use Yeti. They're not allowed to use, I don't know.
Right.
Something else like HC, maybe. They're not allowed to say HC. I'm not sure, but there are some of the basic ones they can't use legally. I also have we have to throw our honorable mention top three out there because our adorable producer Matt Pajeski had the top story being that Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow or didn't see his shadow.
Oh, he saw his shadow, right?
Yeah, which means either that the British are coming by sea and we're having six more weeks of winter.
Let me just tell you that with Punxsutawney Phil,
I don't think it's punks. Punxsutawney? I think it's pucks.
Punxsutawney?
Well, he's a punk if he predicted more winter to me.
I don't know if there's an N or not.
Let me tell you a thing about this. It's almost like the phrase off the wagon, on the wagon. I don't know which one means you're drunk again.
I know, you know? Because being it's on like, the wagon it, sounds like you're drinking.
So if he sees off his the shadow, wagon? There's more winter, or if he doesn't?
Honestly, I don't know.
I can never get it straight.
And this is why I'm kind of surprised we did as well as we did, meaning America, in the Revolutionary War. Because if you held up the lantern in the window, it was like one if by land, two if by sea.
Uh-huh.
Or is it one if by sea, two if by, you know, it's hard to remember those things. I don't think they should have done that, but they were able to get their act together and fight off the British. And I think we're going to have six more.
So,
weeks
Amy,
of winter.
Amy, we're going to get into this Board of Aldermen thing that happened. They were voting on the Rams settlement money.
Yeah.
They were having a hearing on that, and it was not going the way Megan Green, who was the Board of Aldermen president, wanted it to go, and she just ended the proceedings, and people in the chamber were like, what? Okay, they're supposed to reconvene tomorrow, but it was sort of a hot mess. Because there are multiple proposals,
mm-hmm,
for what to do with some of the Rams settlement money. And apparently she's not happy with the way the vote was going on Friday and just said, I mean, it seems like she just said, I'm taking my ball and going home.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, she also accused Joe Vollmer, who is an alderman around the Hill, mm-hmm, area. He owns Milo's Tavern on the Hill, and accused him of being drunk.
Yeah.
And then she took it back later, mm-hmm, and said that she apologized for it. He is threatening legal proceedings.
Yeah.
So we'll see what ends up happening with that. I don't know, man. If I'm him, I'm going forward with it. If I'm Joe Vollmer, this is just me, I would probably pursue something or at least seriously look into it. You can't just throw stuff like that out.
No.
Accuse another alderperson of being drunk without any evidence whatsoever.
And no corroboration from
anyone
else that was there. Right. They're all like, yeah, no, he wasn't drunk. And even Alicia Sonier, who, as KSDK notes, is, you know, one of Megan Green's allies, generally, right? Because Megan Green is out there. She's very progressive. She's very divisive. And Sonier said, quote, "I think that I would have liked us to have a conversation on the bills that were here today." That was as much as she said about Megan Green storming out because what seems to be she didn't get her way. It looked like just an embarrassing hissy fit. And here's my overall reaction, because I do think a lot of the drama with the Board of Aldermen is always embarrassing. And my big concern overall, my biggest concern is, oh my gosh, are we going to blow this once in a generation opportunity with this Rams settlement money? And my reaction was, oh my gosh, yes, we are. We're going to blow this because from the outside looking in, looks like we've got some doofuses trying to run things, or at least if you're not a doofus, you are manifesting doofus behavior. That's how it feels. It's embarrassing, and it is not engendering any trust from the people of St. Louis or St. Louis County that this money is going to be used in a transformational way to improve our city, because everyone just needs to get over themselves. Stop power tripping.
I don't know if I'm more concerned about it than I was on Thursday, you know, how we were going to use that money and what it was going to be and would it be transformational. I feel about the same as I do Thursday. This just seems like some local politics nastiness that,
isn't it embarrassing,
that happens. I mean, yeah, but it's also not completely unusual in local politics.
Oh,
stuff
no.
like this happens all the time.
That's a great point, that local politics tends to be the most embarrassing.
Yeah.
And people are petty. And again, they power trip in weird places. It's like power tripping at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
So there's also some interesting polling that we're going to get into before the show is over today. Remington Research did some polling about the mayoral race in St. Louis and what it's looking like now. And there are four candidates for mayor, and Mayor Tashara Jones, who is the incumbent, is not doing well in that polling.
Yeah.
In fact, she is very underwater behind Kara Spencer. And I don't know if that will maintain. Again, we've got the primary coming up at the beginning of March, and then the actual election happens toward the beginning of April. So maybe momentum will shift. Who really knows? But right now, she is not in a very good position for re-election. So we'll get into that later on. We're going to talk to Sean Malone, who was covering the Board of Aldermen hearing that happened on Friday, and he didn't get punched. So we're going to talk to him before the show is over today. But did you realize that I know we're talking a lot about baseball season
yeah.
coming up. So is City SC season. That is happening very soon. We've got
wow.
Matt Seebeck, St. Louis City SC Chief Experience Officer, joining us next on KMOX.
Angulates down toward the end line for Durkin. Swoops across. Close hitter. It's in the back of the cage. Goes near post. It closes Bryson tonight.
We are the home of City SC Soccer. Actually, Y98 will have all the games this upcoming season here, one of our sister stations. And this is, we're getting very close. We've been talking about baseball season. As I mentioned, pitchers and catchers are reporting on the 12th
Nine
of this month.
Days.
But soccer is coming up, too. In fact, they open the season February 22nd against Colorado. They'll be playing at the new Energizer Park.
Yep.
That's what it's called now. But there is a kickoff event that is happening on the 16th of February. It is the City SC kickoff event at the factory. And joining us today is City SC Chief Experience Officer Matt Seebeck with us on KMOX. How's it going, Matt?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Season 3.
Oh, it's exciting, isn't it? Nature is healing.
It is great. It is.
It's, yeah, 60 degrees outside. And you mentioned 3 weeks away, our home opener at the new Energizer Park, and we're pumped. We're really pumped. We're excited.
Excellent. Well, let's go to this kickoff event, because this now will be just, what, the week before the season actually kicks off. It's at the Factory. What is this kickoff event?
It's you know, you mentioned pitchers and catchers reporting, Cardinals. I'm a St. Louis guy. When winter warm-up comes around, it is kind of that chapter turn, that it, you know, the new players, new season. So this is our version of that. We did it last year. It was a ton of fun. We did it at the Armory.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, 5,000 people showed up. Great event. It's a stage performance, stage show. Coaches, players are there. A lot of fun for friends and family. So this year we're switching it up a little bit. We're going out to Factory, which is a beautiful venue in Chesterfield, taking the show on the road a bit. And it's at a concert deliberately, because we want the pomp and circumstance. We want to make a bang. We'll have our new head coach, Olaf Melberg, will be there. All the players will be there. We'll have St. Louis soccer legends. We're paying an homage to the soccer history here. And then we're actually going to wrap the show up with Steve Ewing from The Urge.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll actually have a musical performance there. So it should be a lot of fun.
It is Sunday, February 16th, and tickets go on sale for that today, right?
They're on sale today for the general public at noon today.
Okay.
So, again, it's a concert venue, so tickets will be limited. There's a lot of demand for it. Mm-hmm. So, please, you know, follow us on social. You can get those tickets on SeatGeek.com at noon today.
And tickets for the regular season to the general public, they open up on Thursday, right?
Yeah, right around the corner. So we've got tickets on sale for City Live today. We have single game tickets on sale coming this Thursday. Which is important, because, you know, people, I think the general vibe around town still is, I'd like to go to a game, mm-hmm. but every game is sold out. That is true, but this is the window where we reserve a block of tickets for every single game this year. And those are the single game tickets that people can get their hands on starting this Thursday. So, and a lot of new kit, new season, a lot of new stuff coming in the next couple of weeks. Really exciting.
Excellent. Now, with this fan kickoff event Sunday, February 16th at the Factory, is it encouraged to wear a scarf? Because I do feel like the scarf to fan ratio in soccer is higher, mm-hmm. much higher than any other sport.
Especially in the winter. Last year, we designed a summer scarf, actually, Amy. So
did you really?
A little bit lighter material.
I've got one.
Yeah, they're quite nice.
I have so many city scarves.
I've never seen you in a summer scarf.
Summer scarf.
Well, don't wear it here.
You know what? I think John
Hamm. You wear it to the game.
John Hamm is in the wrong sport. That guy loves himself with his scarf.
He does love
his scarf. Does he have some city scarves?
He does, yeah. And it's, you know, those summer accoutrements can be, it's a little hot in 100-degree weather.
Does John Mozeliak have one? Did you
I don't
get
know.
Him one?
That's a good call.
He's a big scarf guy.
He is a scarf guy.
He is
guy,
a scarf guy.
Yeah. He's a fashionista.
Yeah, you need to get him one.
Yeah, so scarves are good, but you mentioned, you know, new gear.
Mm-hmm.
Our kit will be coming out soon as well. So this will be our new home jersey. So it's a bit of a refresh for us, because for 2 years we've worn the same city red jersey. So this will be some new threads that our players will wear at home.
Is that something that Major League Soccer does? They switch up the jerseys a lot?
Every year, yeah. Okay. Every year we'll have a new shirt, and we alternate between home and away. So this year will be our new home jersey.
And this is, like you said, this is the actual jersey, not like in hockey, like a third jersey,
right.
Or at the Cardinals where it's an alternate. You literally switch up the whole thing.
This will be the main one, yeah.
How different is it?
It's
Can you
different.
Tell us?
It's different. It's different.
Okay. You can't give us any... give us like one detail on it.
Nobody's listening.
Yeah, no one's listening.
Purina will be on the front.
Okay, well, I think we knew that. All right. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to this new season. So, like, what about the experience at Energizer Park will be different this year?
It's always about, you know, incremental. I think, you know, we have always looked at it, at least culturally at the club, is it's like a Netflix show. So, you know, if you watch season one and season mm-hmm. two, it's the same plot, same excitement, but always introducing new characters and new storylines. So last year we introduced a ton of, you know, fire, smoke and pyro and new food partners. And so, for us this year, it's a little bit more of that. We're going to do some fun stuff with music inside the stadium this year. That'll be new and different. New food partners will be announced, the week leading up to our new match, or our first home match on February 22nd. So it's always keep people, you know, keep thinking new and exciting.
You know, looking at, as you mentioned, like a Netflix show, the first couple of season, you're building the characters, right?
That's right.
Finding
yeah.
out who everybody is, what the nature is of each character, but also introducing new ones. And it does seem like a big kicker here for the Sunday, February 16th kickoff party would be just an opportunity to meet the new head coach, Olaf Melberg.
Totally.
Because maybe people haven't heard from him a lot yet, right? The season hasn't started. They want to know his personality, know what he's like. Plus, Roman Berkey will be there, which is a big one, too. Oh, yeah. But that's, those seem like the like two big pulls for that Sunday event. Not that everything isn't a pull, but like you said, it is a new character.
It is. Yeah, and you know, we brought in six or seven new players last year midseason, so fans got to kind of know, love, and understand those players, how they play, where they play. But then the season ends, and we have this, you know, long winter with snow and ice. So I think for everybody to kind of come back and, you know, see these faces that they started to get to know at this event is going to be a good time.
You know, you mentioned the long winter. It's kind of not. If you think about it, yeah. Because the regular season for this starts at the end of this month. I mean, we're a couple of weeks away from it, really, and it goes into the middle of October. Yeah. So soccer's around for a long time.
This guy sounds like he is not a big enough who doesn't love it enough.
I used to make fun of the hockey offseason because it's like 5 minutes.
It is five minutes. You make it to the Stanley Cup final, you're going back to camp and 4 weeks.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the soccer season's even longer, which is actually kind of good because you get it pretty much all year, it feels like.
Yeah, it's great. And people kind of joke, like, what our off-season looks like. First of all, like it's not very long, as you joke about, but, you know, it's 3 months or so, and any changes we want to make in the stadium pretty much have to be decided by, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas. So it's a lot of strategy and planning in 3 months. So it's nice to get back to the formula of a home game every other weekend.
I wonder if it's like a cat. You know, you can have a really fluffy cat, and then when the cat gets wet, it's like this little rat.
Yeah.
I think if you took the Major League Soccer season, but they have all those in-season tournaments, and you took those out of it, it would be condensed. So I think the midseason tournament spread it out like a cat getting wet.
This analogy?
I didn't know if she was going to land that analogy, but I think it worked.
Get it,
I do.
Right?
Yeah.
If you took out all the midseason tournaments, it'd be like when you get a cat wet.
Right. Yeah. I get it.
This is all day. It's like this all day. I still don't get it.
Have you never watched a cat before?
No, I've never watched a cat. No.
No, I have not.
No. Cats are awful.
Yeah.
All right. So tickets go on sale at noon for City Live. It is the kickoff event for City SC's third season.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It will happen at the Factory February 16th. It's a Sunday, so it should be a lot of fun. Matt Seebeck, thank you. Oh, by the way, tickets at stlcitysc.com.
That's right, and SeatGeek.com. You can get those at noon starting today.
And there is there a signed kit giveaway?
There is, yeah.
Okay.
So no, it's a good point. We're going to be doing we have partnered with an organization called Passback, which is a local nonprofit. They upcycle sporting equipment, so fans are encouraged to bring, you know, old cleats. If you have kids, you have a ton of equipment just sitting around, balls, cleats, etc. So bring that, and you can be automatically registered to win a signed jersey by the whole first team.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Thank you, Amy.
Again, all the information, stlcitysc.com. The season is coming up. The kickoff event, City Live, will happen February 16th at the Factory. Tickets are on sale today at noon. Chief Experience Officer for City SC, Matt Seebeck, thanks, man.
Thank you.
It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the news story from the Missouri Independent, and we covered it here at KMOX as well, about radioactive material in the Westlake landfill. What's going on in Bridgeton is a story that we have been following for a while here on this show. I know that news outlets in the city have been following it. It's gotten some national attention as well. And to talk about recent developments there at the landfill is Dawn Chapman, founder of Just Moms STL. Dawn is with us in studio today on KMOX. Dawn, it's good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So what is different? Because we've known about the smoldering issue. We're having technical issues. There was the smoldering something. There's a fire that has been underground that I think was discovered something like 15 years ago. And there is concern now that it's getting close to where the radioactive material is or might already be there? Where exactly are we right now?
So I think where we are right now is the Environmental Protection Agency just released a new map about a week and a half ago showing all the areas on site that we know now have radioactivity on them that they went decades and didn't test for. So now they've tested, they found it. And what the state of Missouri is saying is okay, so every single site on that you have tested has radioactivity, but there's this area where the fire is that you cannot test, that you have not tested. So we think there's a high probability there could be radioactivity there. Therefore, please come in and take over the whole site because this is more than we can handle.
Quick question. Why can you not test that part?
That's a good question. So the thought is that if you poke a hole in the ground and introduce oxygen, the fire will follow the oxygen and come to the surface.
Okay, so
because it's an oxygenless, smoldering fire,
that's
a
correct.
Flameless fire underground,
almost like
that's
a backdraft.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So the expectation is that are they just waiting for the fire to eventually die out, or
it's all they can do. There is no known way to put it out. It's like a coal mine fire, if you will.
Yeah.
And you know, I hate that answer because we live next to it, you know, but that's the level of uncertainty that we live with every day around this site.
A smoldering fire like this, is this common within landfills?
It can be. And I think that's the frustrating part, right? Is like if it's that common, which there are other landfills that are experiencing a fire, it's like, why would you let this one catch on fire knowing it's got the Manhattan Project in it?
Right. So then what are they going to do then other than just wait for it? It doesn't seem to me that the people who live in the area are getting the reassurance that they need.
They're not. And I think the problem is that until the fire goes out, we're really not going to know. And I think what we are trying to get them to focus on is getting the areas of radioactivity that they can remove, getting that the heck out of the community and as far away from the St. Louis region as we can get it. And then trying to hold that fire steady and still, which it is being held steady right now, and making sure it never moves, right? It never progresses, and it is allowed to just burn itself out.
Why does it seem like there's not enough movement on this issue, even from the EPA? Unless I'm reading the situation wrong, there have been a lot of times over the last few years where it's almost like they're saying, it's fine, everything's okay. At least that's the impression I'm getting from them. Are people in the area and people like you, are you getting that same impression?
We are. I'm very disappointed in EPA's recent comments saying, well, there's no evidence that it's burning. Well, there's no evidence it's not because you never tested. And I'm like, I think this agency really needs to focus on telling the truth, which is sometimes you just don't know. And for us living next to the site, I would rather somebody from a federal agency or regulator look at me and say, hey, I just don't know. I don't have that answer versus make one up that's not a real answer. That makes us feel a level of uncomfortable, right? That's just not fair on top of everything else that's going on at the site.
You mentioned the EPA, and last week we also brought up the Missouri Independent, Maria Kina here in KMOX, local news sources who have been following this story. And the long form piece in the Missouri Independent a while back, it seemed like people were just passing the buck, going, well, it was this agency, the Nuclear Energy Agency, that doesn't exist anymore. So we handed it off to this agency. Well, this agency said it's not our purview anymore, and back and forth. So with the new director of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, what have you heard from him?
So we were thrilled to hear that he has committed to touring the site, because I do think it's something you need to see in person. And, you know, to the press point, we're really pushing that members of press be allowed to be on that tour, because I think that that's the eyes and ears of St. Louis, right, in the region, which have to be brought in. But I think that I'm very hopeful, at least at Westlake, that we can get this cleanup started. With the other sites, I think him coming and visiting that probably sets a precedent for maybe the head of the Department of Energy, right, to come out and do the same at the other sites they're responsible for.
What is your communication with Senator Hawley been like? He's been out in front of this, it seems like, for a while now.
So I have to say, I mean, he really does an amazing job, and really a shout out to his staff. One thing about them, similar to the St. Louis media, is that every document that I send them, I know they read, and he reads personally. And I think that so they are constantly caught up and right where we are, lockstep. That's what it takes. But I think that, you know, with the new administration and with him pushing, and then hopefully with March coming, right, the CR package being talked about, maybe we have a chance for Rica.
Why do you think Senator Hawley gets it, but others don't get it, as far as him, you know, he's so passionate about it and others don't get it?
I think you have to remember that our relationship with him goes back to when he was attorney general, and he was in charge of the fire at that point. And there was a lawsuit going on. So he became attorney general, and this just kind of got dropped in his lap. So he probably is more up to speed than others, just because historically he's been this has been in his wheelhouse and stuff that he's had to deal with. Now on the federal side of it, now he's in charge of the radioactivity, right? And not so much the fire.
So how often do you or your organization have communication with his staff?
Many times per week, and sometimes on the weekends. And I think, you know, that's true also with Senator Schmidt's staff. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that our relationship, and you know what, that's true with Attorney General Andrew Bailey's staff. Like, there is a very broad coalition of elected officials that are lockstep, right? Just because Senator Hawley is loudest and in the press a lot doesn't mean he's the only one. And there's a coalition of Democrats as well, right? Like out west, Senator Lujan, you know, everybody's lockstep on this.
You worked with Cori Bush when she was in office, and now Wesley Bell has taken her position. Have you had contact with him?
I have. You know, Congressman Bell is working on getting up to speed, and he's coming along fast. This is like drinking out of a fire hose,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I mean, the amount of up to speed he has to get, but a lot of that is because the St. Louis press has done such an excellent job with coverage. I can just send him press stories.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it is, like we were talking about this, Ranj and I, last week, we're pulling out maps and looking at the different landfills. But just to, like, a super break it down 101, so we know that the Westlake landfill is radioactive, you know, top to bottom on the surface, deep down. The Bridgeton landfill, which had the subsurface, so just below the surface, smoldering event, we didn't know if that was radioactive. We were afraid that that smoldering event would hit the Westlake landfill, which is radioactive for sure. But now, with the potential radioactive material contamination in the smoldering event at Bridgeton, are we talking like deeper below the surface? Are we talking like a physical distance? Where is that radioactive material in relation to the smoldering event, if I had to draw a picture?
I'm going to use the answer that I wish they'd give us, which is we just don't know. And neither do the federal agencies, because while you have a big complex, right, with Westlake and Bridgeton, they really were a hole in the ground, right? Yeah. It's not separated as the names are, if you will, like from a geography standpoint. And I think that I think the state's right. This is not your typical municipal landfill, which is what they regulate. It's time for the feds to come in and get their Superfund waste, their radioactive waste. And I think even if it's not now, a lot of this, you have to remember that there will be some pockets of radioactivity left behind on this site. There are some deep pockets that simply can't be cleaned. So who's to say in the future those don't migrate over to that side? That's why it's important that the feds have the whole complex.
So what's your level of confidence this is going to happen, that they will take it over?
I'm in the 80s today. I don't think they have a choice. And I think that I really would hope that EPA would stop, though, fighting it and would, you know, the fact that we want EPA to take this over should be a vote of confidence, you would think, right, from the community. So hopefully they stop fighting it and we can get a working deal going for that.
What is the community feeling right now about this, and what more do you need?
I mean, the community is really devastated. We're not in a good place emotionally right now. And even this morning, you know, I had somebody living next to the site right now that messaged me, and it just broke my heart, talking about her ongoing illnesses and her fear. And is this really going to happen? Mm-hmm. And I think we've had a level of endurance, right, for the past 15 years that we shouldn't have had to have. And I think that's starting to wear thin with this announcement. And I think EPA is going to have to step it up and come up with a date to sink a shovel in real soon.
This is, it's such a devastating story. Because if you've been exposed, if you're ill, if you've lost family members, not that it's too late, but it's too late for the family members you lost, the family members who are ill, and you're trying to save future generations and future people. We have friends who it hits close to home because grew up in Coldwater Creek. Yes. And so many members of that family have like thyroid cancer and bizarre cancers in different glands and so forth. And it's, again, I think it's so important to always have hope. But it's like, okay, we've already suffered. We want to make sure people in the future don't suffer.
That's really, you just really hit the nail on the head there. That is the hardest thing that Karen and I deal with, is having to fight so hard and plant a tree that we will never live to see, be able to sit under, right? Like, it's too late for us. And even our family's illnesses and Karen's illnesses, those aren't covered under RECA. Yeah. It's not, you know, so we're fighting for a program for people to, that's going to help them, but it's not a 100% fix. And I think that is what makes this so heartbreaking and why it's so important he come out and visit, because I want him to meet the people that he's too late for. And I want them to have their story, feel like their story was noticed. And they want that. Because they know that this is coming too late for them. And I think it's the least we can do for them is to document what they've been through and give them an opportunity to make this better for somebody else.
So what people listening might want to know is how they can help you. What other than going to justmomsstl.org and donating, is there anything they can do?
You know, the donation, I'm going to have to plug that today, because we didn't expect to be in a federal legislation fight. We are a very small nonprofit and we are both impacted. And I think we are going to have to take trips to DC. That's going to be very scary. It's going to be scary to get on a plane, to be very honest, and land at that airport. But we are also going to have to host meeting space for when the administrator comes into town, things like that. So any donations or any grants anybody knows of, please pass those our way. But the other thing is, follow us on Facebook. And we have a website. We have Westlake Landfill Facebook. We have justmoms.org and .com. We have Just Moms Facebook. Get involved. An email to an elected official matters at this point.
JustMomsSTL.org is the website. There's a donate button. It's right at the top of the page. You can click on that. Dawn Chapman, the founder of Just Moms STL, thank you for coming in and telling us the story. We want you to keep us updated. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we're going to talk to you very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you all for covering this the way you have for the past decade plus.
That is Dawn Chapman with us. It is Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Well, this is a relevant and timely, did you see this? Christopher Ranji, it is Punxsutawney Phil. There's an N.
Yeah.
Punxsutawney Phil. Well, guess what? He and his wife, Phyllis, this is how the story's written. He and his wife, Phyllis, welcomed two groundhog pups into the family last spring. As we mentioned, he saw his shadow, which means six more weeks of winter, but guess how good of a meteorologist Punxsutawney Phil is?
Terrible.
Yeah,
he's terrible.
He's right like 35% of the time.
What are we doing with this stupid groundhog then? Why do we have him? What's the point?
I think they don't want to lose yet another job to AI.
AI would probably get it right, though. Actually, I don't know if I trust AI on this either.
Yeah, I say stick with the groundhog.
Yeah.
Because certainly a guy that spends his entire life underground knows what's happening in the sky.
Yeah, well, is he getting paid? Is Punxsutawney Phil getting paid?
100% unionized. 100%. The Groundhog Union, you do not want to cross that picket line.
No, do not want to mess with those people.
No.
Or those rodents.
Groundhogs.
Are they rodents?
Yeah.
Okay. I know you didn't see the Grammys last night, but
no, I did not.
Metro Boomin from St. Louis was shut out, did not win a Grammy. Chapel Roan, she got Best Artist or Best New Artist. Chapel from the Springfield, Missouri area. Mm-hmm. She is very, very popular right now. But did you see this exchange that happened, Amy? It was the Associated Press. They were, you've got all the people on the red carpet and doing interviews.
Yeah.
And two very young AP reporters were talking to Babyface.
Okay, when you say very young, like...
You know, like 20s.
So
it looked like they were in
20s. Okay.
like maybe mid to late 20s.
Okay.
They were talking to Babyface, the prolific producer who worked in, he had his own music, but he worked with Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson and just dozens of artists.
Oh, no.
They're interviewing him, and he's in the middle of an answer about something, and one of the reporters goes, "Oh, Chapel Roan!" Like, just come, and he goes, "Oh, you want to do that? Go do that." And then he walked away. They had to apologize later for absolutely just stuffing a Babyface for Chapel Roan, who had no idea what was going on. She was just hanging around there. They had to apologize. They got back on camera later and apologized for it.
Yeah, it's and embarrassing.
They are getting just blown up by everybody. Like Kim Kardashian went after him, or Khloe Kardashian. Dionne Warwick went after him.
Oh, Dionne Warwick.
Yeah, right?
Because, like...
It's like, how do you do this to Babyface?
Right. Not only is it disrespectful to anyone that you're giving an interview to, but you can't be a fan. You're a reporter. Do your job. Be respectful. Be professional. And talk to Chapel Roan later.
Oh, man. It was not good.
I don't know if you saw this. And I, like I said, I'm catching up the next day because there are a few things I have less interest in than the Grammys. But Beyonce won Best Country Album with Cowboy Carter.
I did see that.
Which is, I guess, got people talking, like, is there a difference between, like, country as a genre versus, like, covering country songs if you're not a country artist?
Oh, no, I think it's a country album, so you're being nominated for the album. I don't think it matters necessarily what you are.
I only know the one song.
Yeah,
that song.
It got overplayed. But it was a banger.
Overexposure, man. You got to be careful with that.
Yeah.
Do you ever not listen to a favorite song because you're afraid you're going to listen to it too many times and get sick of it, so you try to hold yourself back?
Actually, it's funny you say that because I do.
I do that too.
I do. Because I have a really big problem with earworms.
Yeah.
I have a very big...
Really?
Yes. If I hear a song, I will... And I like it and I'm into it.
Yeah.
I will probably hear the song for the rest of the day in my head, and I will wake up hearing it.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's a weird phenomenon.
I hate it.
I don't have that for songs that I like. I only get that for weird things, like the Filet-O-Fish song.
Yeah.
Is the number one earworm I get is the Filet-O-Fish song.
So, Amy...
And it's not my favorite song.
Amy, this is what I do. Because of my earworm problem...
Yeah.
I will try not to listen to music I like during the week. Because I don't want to wake up when I have to work.
Interesting, really?
I don't want to wake up when I work hearing music in my head.
I have never woken up with a song in my head.
Sometimes it'll keep me up. It's nuts, right?
That is insane.
Yeah.
That might be a...
I should probably get that looked at.
You should probably be studied. Maybe Wash U, the brain doctors there, can study you.
Can we get somebody on from Washington University to let me know if I'm in trouble? Somebody who knows the brain.
I don't think it can be good, I can tell you that.
Well, Amy Marks-Kors, when we come back, we are going to visit with political commentator, author of the daily newsletter, So What? You've seen Chris Saliza on CNN and Washington Post, used to write for them. Chris is with us next on KMOX.
Give me that fish.